you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hi, this is Dana Workman from Haunted Highway on Sci-Fi, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Boom.
This is Bill Murphy of Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
This is Christopher Sanders with My Ghost Story on Biography. You are listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
And Michael Perry.
And we're here. Hello. We're here at The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli and Weekly.
LiveParanormal.com.
Weekly. Weekly at LiveParanormal.com.
Hey everybody, this is Rex Williams, the medic from Destination Truth, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on LiveParanormal.com.
This is Stefan Bergotti from Pacific Coast Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. She rocks!
This is True TV's haunting evidence investigator, Patrick Burns.
And ghost huntress author, Marley Gibson.
And you're listening to Ghost Host. Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Professor Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
This is author Alexandra Holzer, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Jeff Belanger, host of 30 Odd Minutes, founder of GhostVillage.com, and author of lots of your favorite paranormal books, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on LiveParanormal.com. Boo!
This is Nick Groff, executive producer of Ghost Adventures, the original documentary in Ghost Adventures, season 1 through 10, and executive producer of Ghost Stalkers, author of Chasing Spirits, the building of the Ghost Adventures crew, and founder of NickGroffTours.com. You are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Tune in.
Hey, this is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Celebrating her 9th anniversary as the Ghost Host, it's Sophia Temporelli right here on LiveParanormal.com.
The Ghost Host.
That's right, the Ghost Host show is Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. And thanks for tuning in, and everybody, I hope everybody's keeping safe out there, because this is hands down the world's most unique paranormal broadcast. We're starting at 12 years old. Sophia began this show, and congratulations, Sophia, on over 9 years of broadcasting now on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. Thank you, Rob Sarek, the site founder of Live Paranormal, for providing this format each and every week, and to all the moderators for patching us through at live events when we had no internet feed. Thank you guys so much over the years. Feel free to call into the show, 347-202-0316. That's 347-202-0316. And also, feel free to jump into the LiveParanormal.com chat room. It only takes a second to sign in, get yourself an avatar, and you're part of the LP family. Today, renowned televised paranormal historian, author, broadcaster, and lecturer Sam Baltruises will be on air with the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli. Everyone visit sambaltruises.com, Facebook like at Sam Baltruises, author, Twitter, Instagram at Sam Baltruises, and the hashtag Sam Baltrusis, and also a YouTube search, Sam Baltrusis. Upcoming, we have the House in Between producers Kendall and Vera Whippleton. They'll be on the 8th next weekend. Also, Shadow People, The Hat Man, Angel author Heidi Hollis will be on the program on the 22nd. So you don't want to miss any of these upcoming shows. So like the Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli Facebook fan page to learn about the guests as we learn of them real time. Also, like LiveParanormal.com Facebook group page. There's a lot of great new paranormal investigative team member panel roundups on the weekends now. Also, too, memberships, they start as low as $2.99 a month. And Rob Surik's great at rewarding the audience. So a lot of books by some of your favorite paranormal authors, all autographed. He's great at rewarding everybody here, and so that's a big hint. Also, support the vendors here at LiveParanormal.com, too, as well. Paranormal starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, Beyond the Screen and Ghost Light Radio, as well as Chip Coffee of A&E's Paranormal State, Psychic Kids, and now Kindred Spirits, monthly Mondays, right here on LiveParanormal.com and History FM, as well as Ben Hansen, Amy Goodwin, David M. Roundtree, Stefan Brigati, Eddie and Michelle Kopic, Ken Gearhart, and many more. If you miss anything, free MP4 iTunes downloads are available on the homepage of Live Paranormal immediately following the show. And let's see here. Let's bring the ghost host on. Sophia, congratulations. 9 years of broadcasting. Unbelievable, Sophia.
Thank you. I can't believe it's already been 9 years.
Yeah. And also, too, yesterday, sadly, you know, the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James. He passed away 13 years ago yesterday, and he really loved you a lot, and he was a big inspiration of, you know, a lot of your role in the field of the paranormal. You've helped a lot of people with your broadcast through the years, and I know Peter James did too, and I know he loved you a lot.
Yeah, it's been so long. I mean, I can't believe it's been 13 years since he passed away.
Yeah, well, Peter had a message.
We're here with love and light for you.
That's right. He was always here with love and light for you, Sophia. But you got all these pages. You got the Twitter, the Instagram. I think TikTok's going away. But so where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Sophia Temperley with one L and Instagram at Sophia Temperley.
Right. Yeah. Well, you just drop an L because we cursed you with a really long last name. So just
yes,
Sophia Temperley, drop one of the L's to find you.
Well, your real name wouldn't fit if you used it.
Oh yeah, I got the longest out of everybody in the family, but
today we welcome televised paranormal historian, author, broadcaster, and lecturer Sam Baltrus on today's show. Sam's books include Ghosts of Boston, Ghosts of Salem, Haunted Hotels of New England, and many more. His appearances include Travel Channel's A Haunting, Most Terrifying Places, Haunted Towns, Hotel Paranormal, and so many more shows. Everyone visit sambaltrus.com, Facebook, like at Sam Baltrus Author, Twitter, Instagram at Sam Baltrus. Let's welcome him into the show.
Okay, let's see here. I'm trying to unmute as we speak. A little toggly.
Hello.
There we go. Sam, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, I made it.
Hey. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me on the show. Congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on your latest book release.
Yeah, you know, it just came out last week, and I wasn't sure it was going to actually come out, but it did. Haunted Hotels of New England.
Well, can you tell everyone a little bit about the book and where they can find it?
Yeah, sure. So it just launched on Amazon.com. Haunted Hotels of New England is a reissue of a book that I wrote several years ago called 13 Most Haunted Hotels and Inns of New England, mm-hmm. but it's updated. And then I also wrote a book during the lockdown that I called Cursed in Salem. So this is kind of like a combination of the two books kind of smushed together to create like a cohesive narrative. And it's available on Amazon.com right now.
Well, that's amazing that you got the book out there. And, yeah, congratulations on that. What initially inspired you to write both of those books?
So I was a journalist for about 20 years. And when mm-hmm. I was working as a journalist, one of the things I loved doing was interviewing people. And I was having experiences, and I have what we call paranormal blinders. While I was, while this was going on, I would write the Halloween, October story for a local magazine newspaper. And I wrote one back in 2011 that turned into my first book, Ghost of Boston. And at the time, I kind of approached it as someone that was very skeptical of the paranormal and kind of like trying to be objective. And then as I progressed, I kind of tapped into my sensitivity as an empath. And now I identify as a clairvoyant. That's kind of happened over the years while writing these books and going to these very, very haunted locations.
Well, that's amazing that, you started off as a skeptic and now you are writing so many books on the paranormal and doing so many events. It's amazing the way people's views on the field can shift just by, the experiences they have.
Yeah, and, for me, it's been a journey of self-discovery and kind of accepting who I am as a person. And I, I came in, kind of like wanting just to write books. And then I realized, hey, you have to actually interview people and get to know people. So it led to me meeting some amazing people along the way. And I actually had my first TV experience on television back in 2012. So it was pretty early on, a show called Haunted Encounters. Mm-hmm. And the TV just brings in more readers and more people. And I just really enjoy doing the television programs along with doing the books and the events.
And, speaking of things you do in the field, besides writing a book and TV, you also are a co-broadcaster for Paranormal Rewind. Can you tell us a little bit about the show and who you do the show with?
Yeah, so I basically came up with an idea to do a show with my good friend Keith Bailey, and we're kind of like the paranormal odd couple in the sense that he's kind of like he's a lot of fun and he always cracks me up on the phone, and then I'm kind of more like to the by the book and traditional journalist kind of thing, and us together on the phone he's in Texas and I'm in Boston. So when we talk on the phone, I'm like, if we record this, Keith, this would be an amazing radio show. And he's like, Sam, that's a great idea. And so he and I pitched the idea to KCOR, and they loved it. And then the lockdown happened, and I'll tell you, it was the best timing for doing a radio show. And I find that When people can focus on your voice, not the way you the way you look or how you are in front of the camera, it turns into a really, amazing conversation. So I'm finding that I really prefer radio over television or even speaking, online or Facebook Live, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're just really focused on the conversation and the topics at hand. So it's amazing. It's a great show. And I know recently you had on Shane Pittman of The Holzer Files last week.
Yeah, and what's the whole – the Paranormal Rewind is rewinding whether it's cases or TV shows and that sort of thing. And with Shane Pittman, we rewinded The Holzer Files, which is my favorite show on TV right now. And it was awesome to be able to talk to him on a very personal level. He's also his family's been affected by COVID, and his family's in Florida, and so is mine. And so it was just really great to kind of to talk to Shane. He and I are friends on social media, but we really haven't had a conversation. And it was awesome to have Shane on the show.
Yeah, Shane's a great guy. He was a guest on my show. Probably about a year ago when The Holzer Files came out, but he's a really fun to talk to, and it is so great, to find out more information from people just by interviewing them. So I think it's really cool that you do a show too.
Yeah, and I worked in radio way back in the day, not to age myself, but that was my first job was in radio. I worked for ABC Radio, but as a producer and not as someone that was on air. And then I moved into television. And then also did print too. So the idea of going back to my roots in radio has been awesome. And now things are very different. Back then all we had was terrestrial radio, and now we have online radio like liveparanormal.com that broadcasts all over the globe. So people listen to your, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really crazy the way technology has changed things. And speaking of the way technology has changed things, since we are in a quarantine, a lot of people can't go out and investigate. But I know recently that you were a part of the Conjuring House event where they did live investigations and had guests on. Can you tell us a little bit about how you became a part of the event and what you did during your segment?
Yeah, so I was honored to be asked to be a part of that. And I'm good friends with the lovely Andrea Perrin, and she and I, she reached out to me, and also the producer, Jay Bloomkey, who I've known for years, also reached out to me, and they said, hey, do you want to participate in this online, like, live Paracon? And I'm like, okay. And like, sure, yeah. Sign me up. And then they told me the location, and I'm like, oh, I have some stories for you. And, you know, as someone that's clairvoyant, and knows a lot of the people that were involved, including the Heinzens, mm-hmm. and Papa John Huntington, and Bill Brock. I had some stories about them, like as far as like the spirits kind of going after them, and I've seen things when they not even in the house. The house terrifies me, to be honest with you, but
yeah.
them out in public when I've seen them, because I pick up on energy. I don't have to be mm-hmm. at the location to pick up on it. So I that's kind of what I did, is I focused on the historical backstory of the house, and also what I was seeing when I saw them when they first purchased the house with the Heinzens.
Well, that's amazing that you were part of the event. I know it was super cool to watch everyone do their individual segments and live streams and just, you know, learn more about the house from the standpoint of actually kind of seeing inside of it. I know that a lot of people don't get to see that. So it's really cool. You could be anywhere in the world and actually see a very, very historical house.
Yeah. You know, I was addicted to that show. I mean, well, it's not even mm-hmm. a show. It was like a live stream. I was watching it at like 3 a.m. and watching, like, you know, Papa John investigate. I was in the chat room and they're like, hey, you're going to be like one of the experts coming on. I'm like, you know, this is fun. Like, I love this. So the participation of it. And, you know, you and I started talking during that time too. And that, mm-hmm. I met people like you and other people that I should have already known, but haven't, through that live event.
Yeah, it was really great, you know, to be able to, you know, network in the paranormal like that and meet new people. It was great meeting you. I'm generally, even though I'm a radio host, kind of a shy person. So having an event where I was able to meet people like that who was doing the same thing as me, it was really awesome to just meet new people and just see what other people in the field are doing.
Yeah, and it was so cool because, you know, I've seen that, like, I've had, many of my friends have been on your show before, and I'm like, who is this Sophia? And I'm like, and then when we're able to kind of talk on social media, it was just great to finally get to know you. And, you know, I have listened to your show, so I was a fan. I'm like, oh, I'm a fan of Sophia's. So to be able to chat with you, and also, I thought you did a fantastic job. You know, and I know that, didn't you like interview the Heinzens beforehand too? So you had that that experience before to add to the live stream. So that was awesome.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I was trying to interview Kyler, but he actually had a test at that point. So it was good to be able to, you know, go more in depth with the Heinzens themselves and you know, hear more. I asked them if they had found any objects on the property because it's so old. I can't imagine there isn't something historical from the 1800s there, or, you know, the house just being so old at the turn of America. And they said that there is, like, some antiques they had behind their fireplace that the previous owners had just, like, kept in a little pile. So that was weird to, you know, find out and just kind of learn about the objects actually found there.
Yeah, what's interesting with me with that, the land, is the Native American backstory. And as someone who picks up on, you know, I'm a psychometrist, that's the type mm-hmm. of clairvoyance that I am. Like, there was a lot of bloodshed on that property. And when I talked to Andrea about the house, she talked about the soldiers. Her sister Cindy would talk about the soldiers, mm-hmm. the 7 soldiers buried in the walls. And you know, I'm like, you know, there's got to be something to that. And, you know, if you kind of dig into the historical research, there was the King Philip's War passed right through that property, and that they may, you know, there may have, they don't have a proof of this, but there probably was bloodshed on that property, and it was on the line of Rhode Island and Massachusetts. So there was also property battles as well. So there's so much backstory to that land and that house. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, America is like fairly new still in terms, we don't have castles like England does, but when you look at stuff, you know, we have the colonial part of America like Massachusetts and stuff that has so much history with the Revolution, and then you have places like California, which are newer states, but they also have so much history with Native Americans. So it's just weird when you go to different parts of the country, you have, you know, these different spirits that you can reach just due to the history. It's a little bit different. There's not actually landmarks there, but still the land itself has that history.
Yeah, and I, you know, my primary focus is the Salem witch trials from 1692, and you know, that, compared to other parts of the country, that's like ancient. But you know, as you said, like England, in other parts of the world, like that's nothing. Like that's 400 years, 300 or 400 years ago. And you know, with New England specifically, I think it is the oldest part of America. But there is that Native American backstory. And, you know, I grew up in the panhandle of Florida and then moved here in the 90s. And, we go back to the 1500s, and there's a lot of Native American backstory. And people say, well, you're from Florida. I'm like, yeah, but we were one of the first cities in the United States. Like, well, first cities that was founded by the Spanish. So there's New England is sort of the epicenter of America's history. But there are other parts, you know, including California, that has a lot of backstory that people kind of don't focus on because they're like, oh, it's not the gold rush or whatever people focus on for the West Coast. But I'm like, there's a whole backstory that happened before that you need to focus on.
Yeah, and in Florida, you've had so many explorers coming looking for the Fountain of Youth and stuff, and just so much with people just trying to find new land and new places.
And, yeah, where I grew up, so it's on the panhandle, and so there was, like, the Ponce de Leon tried to actually to settle there, and they had, because there was a hurricane, so my hometown is prone to hurricanes, so the first settlement was basically destroyed, and they moved to St. Augustine, which is considered to be the oldest city, even though Florida was not part of the original colonies. But if you look at the date when it was first settled, it was before the 1600s.
And I know you said that you have a specific interest in the Salem witch trials. With all of your knowledge and background in history, what kind of draws you largely to Salem?
You know, when I first started focusing on the Salem witch trials, I had an inexplicable calling to it, and when I went to college here, and I studied actually the Holocaust, and I was really focused on that. And my professor was like, you know, Sam, you really need to look into the Salem witch trials. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I read The Crucible, so I thought I knew everything about the Salem witch trials. And truthfully, The Crucible is a great work of fiction. The names are correct, and the story is basically correct, but I spent a lot of time as a tour guide and as an author kind of detangling the Crucible, because that's kind of what we think of the Salem witch trials when we think of like in pop culture. My initial pull was kind of just skimming the surface. It was just like, oh, this is so fascinating. And also kind of giving a voice to those that were executed was interesting to me. And then as I started giving tours in Salem and started becoming really immersed into the historical backstory of the 19 men and women who were hanged for witchcraft and the one gentleman, Giles Corey, was pressed to death, it started becoming personal to me. I felt like I was giving them a voice, and I would, you know, when I give my tours, I get emotional, and it's like something that's really became something of a passion for me. And then my mother, she's like, Sam, my mother's Southern. She's like, Sam, my mom was doing research on Ancestry.com, and it turns out that we are related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials. So that kind of turned my entire life upside down. This was about 2 years ago that she uncovered this. And I'll tell you, everything started to make sense when she uncovered that, because I've had a personal relationship with the spirits, but I've also been attacked in Salem a lot. I've been scratched, I've been pushed. I even had a murderous attachment that nearly killed me from an event that I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad, and it was featured on a haunting called Provoking Evil. And really what happened, I would say, it was like accidentally provoking evil, because I didn't really realize. I was just kind of telling this spirit's story, and he was a murderer who killed Captain Joseph White in 1830 on the property that was owned by the Crown and Shield. But what happened is I somehow called him, and he attached himself to me. So, yeah, so it's been this ongoing kind of like love-hate relationship with the spirits and entities of Salem. But I think because of the fact that I'm related to the Putnams, to the bad guys, it really explains a lot. And I've done my best to try to make amends to the spirits there. But I keep coming back, and I keep getting like bit or scratched or attacked. So we'll see how long that this happens. I have gone back since the lockdown at the Hawthorne Hotel, and I did the Estes method there to confront an entity that's been stalking me. That's at the very end of my book, Haunted Hotels in New England. And it was interesting. It was very fascinating. And I heard that you have Heidi Hollis coming on your show. I've been stalked by a man with a hat entity for about 2 years. And when I say stalked, I first saw him, it was like 2 years ago. I was working overnight at a hotel in Salem, and I heard like a metal clanging, like someone was banging metal. And I ran upstairs to see if anyone, cause I was friends with the shop owner, upstairs, if anyone was trying to break in. I walk upstairs and I look into the window, and I see like a shadow kind of dart by, and then it stops. And then we make eye contact, and it was a black as like darkness, pure darkness, was wearing a hat. And it was like, I would say like a 1600s era hat. And then it had red eyes. That's the part that terrified me. So I made eye contact with this entity. And, you know, this is something you probably can talk to Heidi about as well, is when people connect with the man with the hat, or what she calls the hat man, you telepathically connect with it. And I got basically from it that it was like, you can see me. And I'm like, yes, I can see you. So we had this really weird telepathic connection. And this was the beginning of this bizarre relationship with this entity that's been following me around Salem. Hasn't really attacked me, but it's attacked people around me.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, you've had so many experiences with that. And I know you were talking about that attachment you had with the murder earlier in the show. I know you also wrote a book called Mass Murders, Bloodstained Crime Scenes, Haunting at the Bay State. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of what inspired you to write that book?
Yeah, so Mass Murders to me was very important to kind of go into the true crime genre, but also still focus on the ghosts associated with as well. So the crimes that are featured in Mass Murders are historical crimes. And my publisher, Globe Pequot, they really wanted me to focus on the Lizzie Borden murders. And the mom and dad, Abby and Andrew Borden, were killed in 1892. And I've always found the fascination with the Borden murders and the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast in Fall River so fascinating, because it's literally 300 years after the Salem witch trials. So the Salem witch trials was 1692, and the murder of Abby and Andrew Borden in 1892 was in 1892. So that was 300 years after, or sorry, 200 years. I got the date wrong. 200 years after the Salem witch trials. So I'm like, that's fascinating. So I focus a lot on Lizzie Borden, and I was able to go inside Maplecroft, and that is Lizzie Borden's later in life home. And then I was also able to focus on other crimes in Massachusetts that sometimes they're overlooked. We have a woman that was killed in the 70s. She is known as the Lady of the Dunes, and she was found decapitated and dumped on the beaches of Provincetown. And I've been connected with this woman for many, many years, and to be able to focus on her story was amazing. I would love to give her a name. She has come to me both physically as a spirit and also in my dreams, and that's one of the cases that I would love someday to – I don't know if we're going to ever solve that case, but I do think that we would be, we'll be able to maybe find out who she was, because I think she deserves to have a name.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that you're doing all this research into them and, you know, trying to help that woman at least have a name. Because it has to be hard, you know, to have been murdered and just be kind of there with no one knowing who you are or what happened to you.
Yeah, you know, while writing mass murders and the other crimes that I've investigated, crime scenes that I've investigated, I always thought that the victims would be lingering. And truthfully, a lot of the perpetrators are the ones that have stayed behind, probably because of guilt associated with a crime. Mm-hmm. And so that includes Lizzie Borden. I think I definitely communicated with Lizzie Borden at Maplecroft, and she came to me and she said, you know, call me Lizbeth. And I started really communicating with her and her sister Emma. And she also told me not to call her to the murder house on 2nd Street, which is, so Maplecroft is, I would say, you know, probably about a couple miles away from her earlier home at the murder house. So she does not like being called to the crime scene house where people investigate the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast over and over. Sophia, have you been there before?
I have not. I would love to go there someday, though.
Yeah, I would love to, because I think that you would really be fascinated by it. And, you know, I'll tell you, when I first walked in, I walked in and I saw a shadow figure and like dart by within the first like 30 seconds of walking in the house. And this was like early, this was about like 8 years ago. And, you know, I've done a lot of events there and I've done a lot of investigating there. And every time I go there, something new emerges that I didn't know before. And, you know, not to give everything away, but also, you know, how I'm related to the Putnam family who were the accusers in the witch trials. I'm also related to Lizzie Borden too. And,
oh, wow.
And so, and that same family lineage, work was connected. So I have, you know, and Sophia, I'm from Florida. It doesn't make sense that I'm related to all these people in New England. You know, like, I'm like, what? I knew that we had roots in Rhode Island, and specifically in Newport and Portsmouth, Rhode Island, but I had no idea that I was connected to the Salem witch trials and to one of the most infamous women in our, you know, in crime history, Lizzie Borden. Like, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, that really is amazing. The only thing I know about my family history is my dad's adopted, and then on my mom's side, my grandparents were from Mexico, so the records aren't that great. So, for my family, you know, there's probably like more history there, but it's so hard to find. So it's great you were able to, you know, kind of trace back and find out more about your lineage.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like my mother, we didn't know much. My grandfather on my mom's side died very young, and in the sense that we didn't really know, like, kind of like where we came from. And we always thought we were Native American, and just based on, like, because we, you know, just we thought we were Native, like, but we're, a lot of people in my family are very empathic and sensitive. And then also just, I think we just automatically assumed that we're Native American, because I think that's what my mother thought. And then when she started doing the Ancestry.com lineage, we had this whole backstory that we had, our entire family had no idea. And this is on my mom's side. My dad's side is Lithuanian. And with my last name, everyone's like, are you Greek? And I'm like, I'm not Greek. I'm actually Lithuanian. They think I'm Greek because of the IS at the end. And so, I'm Lithuanian on my dad's side. And on my mom's side, I have this, like, incredible lineage I had no idea that I had.
Yeah, on my mom's side, I am Native American through my great-grandfather. And then my dad's side, everyone thinks he's Italian because of the Temporelli, but he's actually adopted. So we took his DNA test, and he's just English and Irish. That's it.
Yeah, when I heard you today, I'm like, oh, she's Italian. I'm like, cause I love and you know the thing is I feel like Italian by proxy because I love like a lot of my best friends are Italian and the families are just such a tight knit, wonderful group that I love the Italian heritage. So I would embrace the Italian side of you,
well,
even though it's not
my
Italian.
My grandfather, on my dad's side, adoptive grandfather, he actually was from Italy, Vatican City, Rome, and he actually guarded the Pope.
Oh, that's awesome. See, like, that's interesting. And, like, that is so fascinating, of the things that our families did and how we find these things out. And I have a feeling, as someone that's clairvoyant, I wouldn't be surprised, Sophia, that you, as you progress and as you start digging into your backstory, that you'll find other amazing things in your backstory. I mean, I'm not to age myself, but I'm in my 40s. If I was able to find out the stuff that I was able to find out this late in life, during my midlife, not my late life, but yeah, this part of my life, then that could happen to you too. And kind of the same story, like we didn't really know like where my grandfather, what his lineage was. And he had a few stories about his father, but it was very limited. And it's interesting what Ancestry.com and the DNA, what you can really dig up from that. And I have to think my mother is the one, her maiden name's Hughes, and that's the Hughes lineage is what tied us to the Putnams and to the Bordens. And she did a wonderful job of using Ancestry.com to really dig for our historical backstory.
Yeah, that really is amazing. I do know we have to take a quick commercial break, though, but we'll be right back with more questions.
It's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. And in the chat room, we have Radio Rod Shelton. He too, is located in the panhandle of Florida, so it's a small world. And our guest today, and we'll be right back for the late edition of the show. The hours are like flying by. We have renowned televised paranormal historian, author, seasoned journalist, broadcaster, and lecturer, Sam Baltras. Everyone visit sambaltras.com, Facebook like at Sam Baltras Author, Twitter and Instagram at Sam Baltras, hashtag Sam Baltras, YouTube search Sam Baltras. The Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli. We'll be right back. Woo!
Hi, this is Dustin Perry, the paranormal rock star, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with the most, Sophia Temporelli, only on LiveParanormal.com.
For joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Not only am I Dave Schrader, but I'm Dave Schrader of Travel Channel's The Holzer Files, and you're listening to Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. I feel left out. I wanted to throw myself into your mix of voiceovers now.
I love it, you know? It's almost like we didn't leave break.
Oh, poor Dave, left out of the break there, the sound bites. And speaking of I'm bringing everybody unmuted now. And yeah, towards the late edition of the show, Rod Shelton, he's in the chat room and he's loving this show today. You guys are vibing really good, going over history, and that's what he was posting in the chat room. But we have Sam, we have you and Sophia back in the studio.
Thank you again so much for coming on today, Sam.
Thank you, Sophia, for having me on the show. It's been awesome. I love talking and chatting with you about this stuff. It's a great history lesson for people, so it's good.
Yeah, I know my mom's loved listening to the show. You are an amazing guest, and I know you also have a Zoom lecture coming up on haunted hotels on August 5th. Can you tell everyone a little bit about that and where they can find out more information?
Yeah, so we are doing, because of the lockdown, so we're doing, a lot of the libraries are doing virtual programs. And what's great about that is that anyone from anywhere could actually register for the virtual program. So it's the Tewksbury Library that's happening this week and on Wednesday. And you have to sign up to be able to get the link for the it's a Zoom virtual lecture. But it's going to be about my new book, Haunted Hotels in New England. And I'll be able to hopefully welcome people from not only just the area, but throughout the – I think you can sign up anywhere. So if you're in California, you can sign up for the lecture.
Well, that's great. You know, you can really get that information out there to everyone and not just a small amount of people. That's the great thing that kind of come out of quarantine is how much information can now go to so many different people.
Yeah, we really had to get innovative with what we do normally. And, you know, I regularly speak at local libraries. And, you know, I'm like, you know, what if I, like this would be great if we could do something where we could reach more people, and now we can, so it's good. And I have to think people like Jeff Bellinger, who's my friend in New England, he also does a lot of lectures too, and he's kind of leading the way when it comes to doing these virtual lectures and that sort of thing. So thank you, Jeff, for kind of spearheading this, and thank you to the libraries for allowing me to do a virtual program.
And I also know, you know, with the libraries, they have so many books, and you have so many books. Can you tell everyone a little bit about some of the other books that you've written?
Yeah, so the one that everyone knows me for is Ghosts of Salem, and that was my third book. And that really goes, that's the beginnings of my relationship with the city of Salem, and also with the ghost of Salem. And so that one came out 2014, it actually came out, but I was writing in 2013. And I started when I write my books, I actually try my best to immerse myself in the topic. So I started giving tours in Salem the year before during Halloween. And I'll tell you, Sophia, like giving tours in Salem on Halloween, like October, is crazy. It was like thousands of people gathered around, and, you know, but to be able to do that really was the beginnings of my love. Like, I love giving tours, and I started doing it for research. So that first book is a labor of love on Salem called Ghosts of Salem. And I've written another book on Salem called Wicked Salem that really goes more in depth in the individuals associated with the Salem witch trials. And another book that kind of was, I would say, overlooked, but it is by far my favorite book, is called Ghostwriters. And Ghostwriters was technically launched last September, but they're relaunching it again in this October, because it was kind of overlooked, and it's about famous writers that would write about ghosts. So it could be people like Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, Edith Wharton, who had a relationship with the spirits. And, you know, something like Edgar Allan Poe, for example, you know, some of the spirits, like, they actually would experience ghosts. Like Edith Wharton actually was pretty much plagued by a shadow figure her entire life, and she writes about it. She was terrified of ghosts. But others are actually, Edgar Allan Poe appears as a ghost to multiple people at various places in New England, in New York City. So it's focusing on these legends, and then also focusing on modern authors who write about the paranormal, and it's kind of juxtaposing the new with the old. And I love how Ghostwriters turned out. It was this great idea that actually worked. And that's going to be re-released in October of this year.
I know Robert Louis Stevenson also wrote about ghosts in some of his poems.
Yeah, and a lot of the people so you have the basics like Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft, but then I have like I'm focused mainly more on like Longfellow. I focused on Longfellow. Eugene O'Neill, like he's a playwright. I focused on and there's others that didn't make the cut because they didn't have like a location that was haunted by them. And it just really turned out to be really a good book that I'm really proud of. And the part that I'm probably more proud of is the fact that I was able to talk to a lot of my ghost writer friends and get their story. And the underlying theme of it is when you write about the paranormal and you actually go to the locations to investigate, it can be very dangerous. I talked to people like Richard Estep, who was an amazing writer in Colorado. I talked to my friend Joni Mahan, who I've known for years, and she now is in Indiana. So a lot of the top paranormal themed authors that I'm friends with are in that book. And then before the lockdown, I wrote a book called Ghost of the American Revolution. And that book, to me, is every book seems to be getting better. And I just loved how that one turned out. It was supposed to be released in September, but because of the lockdown, it's been pushed to 2021. And I was able to go all over all the locations that had ties to the American Revolution are in that book, like Philadelphia. I'm based in Boston, so there's a lot of Boston in the book, and a lot of like Virginia and like locations with ties to people associated with the American Revolution are in my new book coming out in 2021.
Well, all the books you've written are amazing, and like you're saying with the ghostwriters, there are so many writers that work include the paranormal that it's pretty surprising. I found out about Robert Louis Stevenson writing about ghosts when I was in fifth grade. I think we were doing a poetry report and we had to read a poem. And of course I had been interested in the paranormal and an investigator since I was eight. So in fifth grade, I wanted to find a poem that was more like Edgar Allan Poe or something about ghosts. And so it's really interesting to just kind of find out these backstories, like from way back when, where people were writing about the paranormal.
Yeah, and their relationship was very different. Like when you look at, say, the late 1800s, there was the whole spiritualism movement that, and a lot of the ghost stories were written as like fact, but they were actually kind of like they were fiction. So you have to kind of be careful. Like you have to like, hey, is this person actually? You know, like they're saying that they saw the ghost of Reverend Harris, but did they actually really see Reverend Harris? And that's Nathaniel Hawthorne, who I love. Like he's from Salem, and he wrote The Scarlet Letter and House of Seven Gables. And when you actually dig into historical research, you're like, oh, he actually did believe in ghosts, and he actually did see it. So you have to be careful whether or not like they did believe. And if you look at sort of historically, like you didn't go public with ghosts. Like if you had an encounter, you wouldn't like publish that, hey, I saw the ghost of so-and-so sitting on the corner of my bed. You would be viewed as crazy and probably ostracized by the community. But I think a lot of people did actually believe in ghosts. And in some cases, the ghosts served as inspiration for these authors.
Yeah. And with all of your research with your many books, what has been the most interesting location that you've researched or just kind of your favorite place that you've seen?
You know, I've been so focused on New England for so long. When I wrote my book Ghostwriters, I was able to actually go to what inspired Stephen King. And I've been a longtime Stephen King fan since I was a little kid. And The Shining was probably my all-time favorite book and movie. Well, I was able to go to the Stanley Hotel, and I'll tell you that was so I've always wanted to go there. And my youngest brother, Justin, had just moved out to Boulder, Colorado, or the area of Boulder, Colorado, for a couple of years. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to use this opportunity to see my brother and to see the most, like, famed location that I've wanted to see for many years. And so I was able to go to the Stanley, and I'll tell you, I do think it's very haunted, but it was worth it. It was just beautiful, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. I also got altitude sickness too. I'm like, why am I getting so sick? And I had altitude sickness, and I had no idea what that is. And apparently that people know about that in Colorado, and I had no idea what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. And with all of your research, where is one place you would still like to just find out more about or go see?
You know, now that I know that I'm related to the Putnam family and the Salem witch trials, I really want to go to England, and I have been to England, but not as a paranormal investigator, and really mm-hmm. research the Salem witch trials at locations with ties to the Salem witch trials, including my family. Like, a lot of these people knew each other in England before they came over to the colonies in the 1600s. And kind of like maybe like focus on locations with ties to Rebecca Nurse, who was one of the Salem witch trials victims, or mm-hmm. Or the Putnam family. Because if you look at the family lineage, like what happened with the Putnams, and I was also related to the Gould family, who accused people 10 years before the Salem witch trial, so 1682. And look, what made them kind of flip and start accusing innocent people of witchcraft? Like, that's the part that I want to dig into.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I learned about the Salem witch trials in my high school English class with the Crucible, and it's crazy that people did that, and they would drown the witches to see if you drown, you weren't a witch, but they, like, it just didn't even make sense. Their methods didn't even make sense. If you survived it, then you were a witch. If you didn't, you weren't, but they were still going to try and figure out a way to get rid of witches. It was super counterproductive and just really ridiculous.
Yeah, so, like, the different tests, like, so the, a lot of that derived from, you know, like, my cousin who was, you know, like in the Crucible, there's the Abigail Williams, who's the afflicted girl. Well, my cousin, mm-hmm. Ann Putnam Jr., was one of those girls. And I really think that if you really look at their story, her dad, Thomas Putnam, was tied to all the major players. So, and the Putnams knew, they've known, like, a lot of the victims for, and it was a small community, so they all knew each other, and mm-hmm. they wanted to get rid of them, because whether it was for money in their land, or whether it was because they were different, but I do think that little, you know, Ann Putnam, who was, to me, like, the ultimate evil ever, because she was one of the afflicted girls, I think she was just a puppet. I think that her dad and her family were telling her to accuse people for their personal interests.
Yeah, for sure. And I know we're coming towards the end of the show, but are there any websites, upcoming interviews, or events you would like to mention?
Yeah, so go to my website, sambaltrusis.com. It's BALTRUSIS.com. The Tewksbury Library, if you go under events, you can actually a link to the Tewksbury Library event, which is on the 6th. And a lot of I was signed up for a lot of Paracons in the fall, but because of COVID, they're being pushed to 2021. So I have Mass Paracon that's coming up in 2021 in September, and that's going to be in Quincy, Mass, which is right outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And then I also have what is called the Witch City Parafest, which is happening in June. And that's with a group of friends that are local who are putting on an event in Salem.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today, Sam. It's been great talking to you, and I would love to have you back on in the future.
Absolutely, Sophia. And I hope we can meet in person someday.
Yeah, that would
definitely.
Great. Hopefully this quarantine will end soon so we can go back to investigating and, you know, just meeting up with new people in the field.
Absolutely. Well, have a great day, Sophia, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thanks,
you too, Sam. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow, amazing guest. Even Radio Rod, he's still in the chat room saying just amazing knowledge Sam has.
Yeah, Sam is such a great guest. I want to thank him so much for coming on today. I want to thank you all for listening. This show definitely would not be possible without all of you. And I will talk to you guys again next week. Bye.
Great show, Sophia. Yeah, the Ghost Host Show is Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com. For guest information, Sam Baltrusis, author on Facebook, also Twitter and Instagram at Sam Baltrusis and hashtag Sam Baltrusis. Also, check him out by YouTube search, sambaltrusis.com is the website. And also for all of the events, he has them all current and up to date along there too as well. Coming up, we have the House in Between producers Kendall and Vera Welpton. That's going to be the 8th. That's next weekend, already coming up. And Shadow People, the Hat Man, Angel author, Heidi Hollis, as Sam was mentioning too. She'll be on the program on the 22nd. The Ghost Host Show is Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com. We'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Debbie at Xeon Ghost Adventures. You're listening to The Ghost Host with your host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com.
God bless you all.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.